Hello and welcome to In the Booth on Sportsnet 650, your official home of the Canucks. I'm Brendan Batchelor, as always, joined by Randeep Janda. And the Canucks have had a heck of a road trip thus far, 4-1 through five games after a come-from-behind 5-4 overtime matinee win against the Detroit Red Wings on Sunday, led by Jake DeBrusk and his second career hat trick, including a heck of a shot off the post and in for the overtime winner. So, Randeep, let's start there. Dealer's choice, what do you want to begin with? The 4-1 road trip from the Canucks thus far, or Jake DeBrusk coming alive and moving into the team lead with 10 goals on the year?
Let's go Jake DeBrusk on this one, because there was a lot of discussion in this market about, hey, why isn't he scoring goals? And he doesn't look right, or is there a fit? There was even some folks saying, could he be involved in a trade out of Vancouver when the Zadorov conversation started? I can't believe I heard that from some people. 10 goals, a hat trick, the second of his career. And what I love about his game right now, Batch, is he's scoring them different ways. They don't have to be, you know, end-to-end rushes every single time. He's getting the greasy ones. He's scoring on the power play. And also, he's able to get the highlight reel goals off the post and in, set up by Elias Pettersson in overtime. That's the Jake DeBrusk was advertised when he was signed with the Vancouver Canucks. And we're starting to see that, even though there might have been some, I think, which is natural. You know, you're not going to start off scoring in bunches with your new team. It might take a month or two to get going, and he's going all right.
Yeah, and, you know, he was involved in four of the five Canuck goals in that win over the Red Wings, and you could argue that they were the four most important goals of the game for the Canucks, and in fact, all of them had a pretty high level of importance for a few reasons. Obviously, his power play goals early in the second period turn a 1-0 deficit after the Canucks were soundly outplayed by the Red Wings in the opening 20 into a 2-1 lead. Then he gets the second assist on the game tying goal from Erik Brännström with under 4 minutes left in the third and scores the overtime winner. So not just producing for this team, but contributing to big goals at big times, especially in that win over the Red Wings. That's what you want to see. And I know he's been sort of seen as a streaky scorer in the past, and, you know, based on the production he's had of late, as you look now up to 9 points in the last five games, I guess there is some evidence to sort of back that argument that he's a little bit streaky. But I think clutch is another word you could describe Jake DeBrusk in as well, and some big goals and some big contributions at big times in that game against the Red Wings in particular.
And chemistry doesn't come right away, but, you know, he's working hard. He has been working hard. And I think on this road trip, there was some discussion at that final practice before they went on the road trip. The practice was at UBC, and just him playing a little bit more physical, not necessarily throwing bone-crunching hits, but just getting to those spots, playing a tougher game. He's a wide body in the sense that he's got broad shoulders. He's tough to knock off the puck. And, you know, I think we're seeing that with Jake DeBrusk on this road trip. So if that was discussed internally, if that was something that was brought up with him, which I'm led to believe it was, he's definitely, it's registered with him in front of the net. The middle of the ice is the toughest part of the ice to get to. And in the last two games, Jake DeBrusk has been able to do that. He's not the only one, but that also serves him well for the future, Batch. And we covered that game in that series in Edmonton and Nashville. That time of the year, you got to fight for every inch of the ice. You got to fight for real estate in front of the opposing goaltender. And these are some great habits that Jake DeBrusk is displaying right now.
Absolutely. And he's got plenty of playoff experience too. So you know that he's probably going to show up when those games matter the most. We also need to talk about who's not contributing to the Vancouver lineup right now, and namely Filip Hronek, who has been out the last two games after sustaining an apparent upper body injury right at the end of the loss to the Pittsburgh Penguins. Yet, the Canucks, to their credit, and they haven't always been easy, they were both overtime wins, are 2-0 since Hronek's been out of the lineup. And they've gotten some good performances on the back end from depth players. Noah Juulsen blocked what felt like 100 shots in the win over the Red Wings. And in spite of the fact that there are major questions about their defensive depth, and I think it's fair to say there still are over the long term, the five guys on the back end, and then, of course, Quinn Hughes, who just plays and plays and plays and plays some more and doesn't really come off the ice very much, they've you know, scrape together a couple of pretty good performances and a couple of wins for this team. And I think they deserve a lot of credit for doing that without their second most important defenseman in Filip Hronek in the lineup.
Yeah, without Hronek, there's a couple of things that happen. First and foremost, you mentioned Quinn Hughes, what, plays 31 minutes in that game against Detroit. Against Buffalo, he played 28-plus. He is having to carry a very heavy load, and that's going to happen forever how long Filip Hronek is out for. Now, the other thing is, you need your goaltender to play an A game, whether that's Lankinen or if Shelovs gets in, and Lankinen's been able to do that on the road as well, where if there are giveaways, if there are times and stretches in the game where you're eating pressure, can your goaltender make up for those? And Kevin Lankinen has been able to do that. And the third and final thing, Batch, is those other guys you mentioned. Whether it's a Carson Soucy playing 21 minutes, whether it's Tyler Myers, 23, even Desharnais and Branstrom, they're hovering around, what, 13 minutes against Detroit. Are you able to play a relatively, you know, clean game? And there were giveaways. Juulsen had four in that game. There were other giveaways that Branstrom and Desharnais combined for. But the fact is, no single player is going to replace Filip Hronek. This is a guy that eats 24 minutes a game. He's your second most important defenseman. But collectively, can you take that ice time and can you limit the damage and also occasionally make plays? Branstrom did that. Noah Juulsen eating, you know, pucks for lunch on an early game, noontime game in Detroit, you know, that's something that you're going to need that consistently enough. And we'll see. Hronek, at some point, obviously not having his quality of play in the lineup hurts you. No doubt. That's a tough player to replace. But on this road trip, it can do a couple of things. It gets you points, but it brings the group a little bit closer together to say, hey, guys, we got to do this together. So far, so good. That's just a tough player to replace. So at some point in time, I feel like Vancouver's got to add some more depth to the back end.
Yeah, and it's just a question of whether it's immediately here in the short term or if they look at this group of defensemen on the back end and say those guys have been able to cobble together some good performances, it can buy us a little bit of time. But I think we'll get into that a little bit more in the show because one of the questions in the mailbag is about Nils Höglander and his future with the organization, which is an interesting topic in and of itself, but I think it's tied to any moves that this organization might make going forward. So they're 4-1 through five games on the trip. They've guaranteed themselves 8 of a possible 12 points, but they can go for 10 on Tuesday in Minnesota against the Wild. And I should say Kirill Kaprizov and the Minnesota Wild, like a band that has a front man. Kirill Kaprizov is that guy and has been that guy for the Minnesota Wild thus far this year.
And you know how sometimes bands have, like, they have the lead singer and then there's like the second option, right? Which is close by. No, this guy is the star lead singer and everybody else.
He's like a solo artist with a supporting band.
Exactly. Like this is, you know, this is a golf in class, so to speak, using a phrase from soccer. And Minnesota is not going to be an easy matchup. Remember, that was the house of horrors last year for the Canucks. They allowed 10 goals in that one game where Casey DeSmith lost the confidence, really, of the team. After that, they stopped using him less and less as the season went on. Minnesota is a different team this year, but their goal differential plus 19. This is a team that is 16-4-4, second only to the Winnipeg Jets in the Central Division. And they are tied with the Jets in points. That tells you how good they've been low-key. They've been able to pick up the points. So it's going to be a tough matchup. And I think that's where the defense of this team, can they cope with some of the high-end teams in the NHL? When Filip Hronek's in that lineup, Batch, it's so much easier because you're tilting the rink when Quinn Hughes and Hronek are out there. Now, you still get that to a certain degree with Quinn when he's on the ice with Tyler Myers. But those other two pairs, are they able to cope against the big, you know, bruising teams, but also the highly skilled teams? I think this will be certainly a test for Vancouver because they haven't played a team like this on this road trip. This is the best team that they're going to be playing.
And in fact, you know, we've heard a lot of talk in the market and a lot of speculation about why are they so good on the road and have struggled so much at home. And I think there are some legitimate points to be made about the way that they play on the road and maybe they try to overcomplicate things at home. But I also think that in terms of quality of opponent, their road schedule has been a lot easier than their home schedule thus far. When you look at some of the heavyweight teams that have come into Rogers Arena that they haven't had to go and visit yet, and they haven't played the Minnesota Wild either way this year, but this is going to be a test for a depleted group not just Filip Hronek, but obviously missing JT Miller up front. And yes, they've gotten great offensive contributions from all over the lineup, and guys on all four lines have been able to score and contribute. But it's one thing to pick up wins away from home against teams that you should be beating. And let's be honest, for the most part on this road trip, they've played teams that they should be beating, and they've done a good job of picking up those wins. And, you know, you have to play the game on the ice to earn the 2 points on any given night. But I think the Wild are going to be a different level of challenge than what they've seen, arguably, on the road overall this year thus far.
And you're also going to be playing against the player that is probably the favorite for the Hart Trophy right now, Kirill Kaprizov. You mentioned him earlier on, but how do you play against him? You have to make sure that you're in his face, you play him physical, and you can't lose track of this guy because he can score from anywhere. So those breakdowns that we did see a couple of games ago, you can't have those, right? You can't have those where you're losing track. That Pittsburgh game specifically, against this Minnesota team, against Kaprizov, those are going in the back of the net. And shouts to Boldy and Rossi, who have also played well for them. But, you know, they've got some scorers. And just because we don't talk about Minnesota on a National League perspective, they're one of the better teams in the NHL right now. And this will be a significant, I think, step up for Vancouver when it comes to competition.
And I think in talking about that and talking about this blue line that has done a good job through a couple of games, we also need to be honest about where this team is playing, because we know internally within the organization they're going to be. And I hearken back to the end of the season after Bruce Boudreau had come in as the head coach and they went on that great run and got themselves back in the playoff conversation, but ultimately missed out in the end. And there was all the conversation in this market about, you know, they found their head coach. Bruce Boudreau's their guy. And what happened at the year-end press conference? Patrick Alvin and Jim Rutherford came out and they said, we still rely on our goaltender too much. We have to be better defensively. And to his credit, Kevin Lankinen has papered over a lot of the defensive cracks for the Canucks in a way that Thatcher Demko used to do for this team. So, you know, they've won a couple of games, albeit hard-fought ones in overtime. You know, fan sentiment and media sentiment is going to be pleased with the results they've got right now. But, you know, inside that front office, they're going to be looking at the performance. They're going to be looking at the underlying numbers. And they're probably going to be honest with themselves and say, you know, as much as we've got the job done for a couple of games here, Kevin Lankinen has been a big part of those two wins. You know, he makes that save on Tage Thompson in overtime against the Sabres. Otherwise, the Canucks lose that game. He made multiple big saves against the Red Wings to keep the Canucks in it and allow them to go into overtime and come back and win that game. So just because they've won doesn't necessarily mean that the defensive performance will be at an acceptable level for the organization, and that's going to be part of their assessment here as well.
And one of the areas that I think we look at with this team is that on certain games, and Detroit maybe not so much, but against Buffalo and Boston specifically, and Pittsburgh for sure since they lost that game, was where's the offense, the shot attempts, where's that ozone time? Well, good offense comes from good defense. If you're playing to a structured game, everything's in front of you, you're not chasing, it's easier to launch that transition attack. So yes, being more reliant on your goaltender, not being in structure so much, takes away from offense as well. So this is something that they will have to improve. A big part of that, of course, is JT Miller. When you're 5-on-5, you know, your center, the guy that's supposed to take the tough matchups, he's a physical presence, is not in the lineup. And even when he was, he's not his physical self because he was dealing with something in terms of a physical ailment as well. That's something that it takes an effect. But I think there's a couple of things here. If you stick to your structure, it's easier to launch those counterattacks, Batch. And we haven't necessarily seen that from Vancouver as consistently as we saw last year. Last year, they were amongst the best, if not the best team, in, you know, sitting in their structure and then attacking and pouncing. Not necessarily a counterattack team, but picking their spots. This year, we haven't seen that just because they've had to eat a little bit more pressure.
Yeah, and again, they're surviving that pressure, and some of that is down to the defense. And again, like, I'll bring up Noah Juulsen on all his shot blocks from the game against the Red Wings, but Kevin Lankinen deserves a ton of credit as well. And now he has the NHL record for consecutive road victories to start a season, 10-0 away from home, and he's going to put that streak on the line against the Wild on Tuesday as well. All right, we're going to break early and come back with the mailbag on the other side. We'll answer your questions that you submitted on Twitter and Blue Sky and get into plenty of more Canucks topics in moments. You're listening to In the Booth on your official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to In the Booth on Sportsnet 650, your official home of the Canucks. Brendan Batchelor and Randeep Janda with you. If you missed any part of the program and are listening on the radio, we live as a podcast as well on the Canucks Central podcast feed. So make sure to subscribe. You get Canucks Central every weekday with Sat and Reach. You get every Canucks postgame show with Sat and Bick. And you get this show In the Booth every week as well. All right, Randeep, let's open up the mailbag as we asked for questions from our listeners both on Twitter and on Blue Sky. And let's take a look here as we had a number of people contribute this week, and we always appreciate our fine listeners for giving us all sorts of great questions. Let's begin with @jcog88 on Twitter, who says, after today's game, who has been the team's best free agent signing? He also says, how amazing has Quinn Hughes been? So I think we can all agree Quinn Hughes has been tremendous, remarkable, amazing, whatever word you want to
historic.
Use.
Historic.
Yeah, absolutely. Setting the franchise record for assists by a defenseman. Who's been the best free agent signing for this team? I think is an interesting question. And I wonder if JCOG means this summer or overall, especially when you look at a guy like Pugh Suter and the contribution he's been able to make, and of course Jake DeBrusk coming off the hat trick in that win over the Red Wings as well.
The answer for me is a slam dunk. It's Kevin Lankinen. This is the player yeah. that has, in a lot of ways, been the MVP of the team thus far, outside of Quinn Hughes, of course. Quinn Hughes is with the bullet, but if you're saying who's number two in that, Kevin Lankinen, and he's been the best signing, and that's not a discredit to Kiefer Sherwood, Pugh Suter, others, but Lankinen and what he's been able to bring, consistency, a high level to the goaltending on this team. And for any other team, if you lose your number one starter and you have some questions, you don't have a veteran, even if you do have a veteran in your team, but do you have a confidence in the player to win games and start off on the road 10-0, making NHL history in his own right? That doesn't happen, you know, every year for a team. That doesn't happen normally. So the question I would ask is, imagine if Kevin Lankinen was not on the Vancouver Canucks.
Yeah.
What would be the fortunes of this team? Knowing what, you know, struggles that Artur Shelov has had, it'd be a very, very different scenario. So I think Kevin Lankinen is by far the best signing, free agent signing, for this team, for me anyways.
Yeah, it's hard to argue based on how much of a contribution he's made to the team this year, especially on the road where they've been much better than they have been at home. And, you know, now he's got the NHL record for most consecutive road wins to start a season with 10. And you have to imagine that he's going to get the start again on Tuesday against the Wild with a chance to make it 11. Next question comes in from @MJVanCity on Blue Sky, who asks, has Danton Heinen been a disappointment so far? Doesn't seem to have formed good chemistry with anyone yet. Seemed really lost in the game on Sunday. And I don't know if I necessarily agree. What I would say about Danton Heinen is the offensive upside hasn't necessarily been there to the degree that I thought it might be. Although he does quietly have 10 points to this point in the season, including 7 assists. I think he provides some consistency and some solid depth play that they haven't always had in past seasons. And, you know, is there more of an offensive player there? I think it's possible. Is there a guy that, you know, could have a little bit more flash to his game? Maybe. But I think he's quietly been pretty consistent, just not very flashy at all.
No, he hasn't. And I think from an offensive perspective, if you think his ceiling is 17, 18 goals, which he's been able to score in the NHL, he's working at a lower rate than that right now. He's more in that 13-goal range projected for the over the entire season. So disappointment if you're expecting a little bit more offense. Against Detroit, I think there are two areas. And generally, Danton Heinen defensively is really solid. He makes the right decision. On two of the goals that Detroit scored, he had two attempts to clear that was either a fan or he wasn't able to make it. Those are types of plays you expect Danton Heinen to make. That's supposed to be his bread and butter. So when he makes mistakes like that, I don't mind if there's not as much offense as expected, maybe, if you're saying, okay, he's not near his ceiling offensively, but defensively he's got to be good. And I thought against Detroit he had some moments where you're saying not the greatest, but in terms of a disappointment, I wouldn't go that far. It's still early in the season. You mentioned, you know, he's got 10 points. I think he's been about average, but he hasn't been a disappointment.
I would say that, yeah, there's a few mistakes you can pinpoint in his game, absolutely, but his base level is still pretty solid for a guy that's essentially playing on your fourth line right now. So, you know, you'll take that at the moment, and then, you know, is there higher upside? Is there opportunity to play up the lineup? We'll have to wait and see. Austin in Langley, our good friend, writes in with a question about another player down the lineup that's received some criticism of late, Nils Höglander. And this is tongue-in-cheek from Austin. He says, will Höglander board the team plane post-game, or will he be going right to his new team? Of course, he was in trade reports, trade rumors this week, Kevin Weeks reporting that there are a number of teams checking in on Nils Höglander as his ice time has dipped in the last handful of games. So I guess let's talk about this in the sense of what does the future hold for Nils Höglander? Where does he fit in terms of being trusted by his head coach, Rick Tocchet? Does it make sense for the Canucks to stick with him? His minutes were up in the game against the Red Wings, by the way. He was north of 10 minutes after not having played that much in recent games. And part of that maybe was because Connor Garland was out of the game for a little bit there after taking that puck off the ear and needing some repairs. But where do you think things are with Nils Höglander? Where do they sit right now?
Yeah, so with Connor Garland's injury in that game and him leaving, that gave Höglander an opportunity to get back in that game. Remember, he took a penalty in the offensive zone 200 feet away from his own net that might have stapled him to the bench had Garland not gotten hurt there. So, you know, that was a big moment in the game. But to his credit, when he was given that opportunity with Garland in the locker room, the Canucks were able to generate chances off the rush. You know, Nils Höglander was very prominent in that. He set up Teddy Bluger for one of them. So I would say, yes, he got the opportunity because of Garland's injury in that moment, but he did bring a better effort throughout the game. The reason was there to staple him to the bench, but Rick Tocchet brought him back out throughout the game. In terms of long-term look at Nils Höglander, yeah, this is a big question mark because trust is the key word here. And does Rick Tocchet trust Nils Höglander defensively? I think we can all say no. You know, ice time usually dictates that. And it goes back a couple of years. So I'm not sure if you really want to add a defensive player. You know, what is Nils Höglander able to get you right now? If he's a part of a bigger package, I could certainly see that. But from the trust aspect, it's not there right now. Could that change? Sure. But as of right now, it's not there.
Well, and the way I look at this situation is there are pros and cons to either, right? If you keep Höglander, you try to stick with him. We know there's offensive upside there. If they can work with the player, if he can round out his game, he could turn into something for them. At the same time, they're pretty banged up right now. It's clear that they need help on the blue line, regardless of whether they're banged up or not. And, you know, depending on what you think of the Canucks' window or their ability to contend, is there greater value there by going and bringing in someone that can help you as a defenseman or defensively at the expense of the offensive upside that Höglander brings? Because we look at the goal scoring on this team right now, they have no lack of guys that are able to contribute offensively. It's like everyone on the team has 6 or 7 goals at this point, or it certainly feels like that. So I guess it's up to each individual. For me, if the right deal was there, that you part ways with Höglander, and whether it's, you know, just him moving on or whether it's part of a bigger package, if it means that you help your back end, I would be okay with doing that because of the depth at forward that you know you have organizationally, with a guy like Max Sasson playing well at the NHL level, with a guy like Archdeep Baines able to come up and contribute. You know you've got Phil DiGiuseppe in the AHL who hasn't even played NHL games this year. Nils Åman, you know, Atu Ratu's rounding into
a pretty good player. You might give Lekkomäki
another look. Exactly, Lekkomäki could come up. So for players in a similar spot to Höglander or guys that could fill his spot in the lineup, there's a long list of players who are capable of doing that. The list of defensemen that can help this team is very short. And so that's why my personal opinion is I would be willing to part with Höglander, depending on the deal, of course, if it meant that you were helping shore up your blue line.
And the larger the sample size gets, it does raise questions of about that long-term future. And I think with Nils Höglander, you mentioned it, Max Sasson plays, what, six and change in this game. But at a certain point in the game against Detroit, he was promoted while Nils Höglander had been demoted on that line. So, you know, something to watch there. Are there players that might be cheaper and can provide a similar style and bring some trust from the AHL level? Manny Malhotra is somebody that has been coaching, not identical to what Rick Tocchet wants, but very similar. So players graduating from the AHL are coming with the understanding of that two-way game. In the NHL, it's a different speed. Can you match that? We'll see that. We've seen it with Vance a little bit. We've seen it with Max Sasson. And if there's more call-ups. The other thing with Höglander is different regime, right? He was drafted by the Jim Benning regime, and everybody is given a chance to a certain degree, but there's always a expiration date to say, all right, you got to show me in this amount of time. If not, we need to load up for the playoffs or load up for a playoff run. And key part of that is, yeah, you're right, defense wins championships. Defense gets you deeper in the playoffs, and the Canucks need depth there.
Yeah, one thing I push back on, though, is that this is a management group that has given Höglander the extension.
Sure.
So they've endorsed him to a certain extent. But at the same time, I think that extension makes him quite movable because he's a cost-controlled player who this season is only making $1.1 million. And that number is going to go up next year when the extension kicks in. But because of how cheap he is right now, I believe it was Sat was making this point on our airwaves earlier in the week, that basically any team in the league can afford to acquire a guy making $1.1 million right now. Now, you know, beyond this season, he'd have to fit into your long-term cap plans and all of that. But for a guy that, you know, will be seen as having offensive upside, will be seen as, you know, not getting an opportunity to show that offensive game in Vancouver, I think he's a pretty attractive option for a number of teams, and it's why I'm not surprised at the report from Kevin Weeks that there are a few teams kicking the tires on Nils Höglander.
Well, let's talk about a couple of those teams, because Washington is competitive, Carolina is competitive. To your point, you've got some cap room right now because he's got a low cap hit this year, so a contender's saying, hey, maybe he might fit in our lineup. Maybe we can get him right. And that Carolina's been interested for some time now, apparently, according to reports. On the other side, you have a larger market because rebuilding teams or teams that are further in the standings are saying, we've got players under term, and some markets like Columbus, who was the other team mentioned, has a hard time attracting free agents and getting players. So if you're able to get somebody not only for this year, but 3 years beyond that, it helps you build maybe a new foundation for a younger team and gives you that cost certainty. So if you're dealing with the cap floor, it gives you some certainty to say for the next 3.5 years, you've got a player on your book. So Nils Höglander is appealing to both contending teams and rebuilding teams for that reason, because of that contract.
And so then the obvious follow-up thought from that is that the market should be quite strong for him, that the value for him on the market might be more than you might think. And that, you know, on top of what I talked about needing help on the back end, makes it that much more enticing to trade the player. And that's why I think, you know, Austin's initial question was a joke about whether Höglander was going to get on the plane with the team or head straight to his new team. And look, he hasn't been moved yet as of the time of recording. But with a variety of factors, hampering the Canucks right now, the fact that they are performing in spite of the injuries, that they've won 4 or 5 games on the trip thus far, if there was any question about whether this group deserved or was able to earn the right to have this management group help them out, I think what we've seen from them on this road trip is a really good sign in that regard. So it would not surprise me if the Canucks make some sort of move relatively soon. We're coming up on the 1 year anniversary of them acquiring Nikita Zadorov here in the next few days. And it wouldn't surprise me if Nils Höglander ends up being a part of some sort of move to try and help the back end.
The 4-1 stretch thus far in the road trip also helps management. It also buys them some time. There's not a panic move that needs to be made. This team is functioning well right now. Is it perfect hockey? No. There's a lot of up and down. It's a bit of a roller coaster in game at times, but they're picking up results. So you don't have to force a move. You're not going to other GMs and saying, we're in a situation right now. We need to make a move, and they can take your lunch money or try to anyways. Vancouver's in a good position because they are winning games. They can go to those negotiations, if there are any going on, and say, hey, we don't need this. So I think it buys you time, And also, it buys you a little bit of leverage in some of these conversations.
Next question comes in from Sarah in Souk, who writes in, and she's got a comment, first of all, before the question. She says, okay, we all know it was never Rory's fault that the Canucks had that blip last year, but was it actually my fault due to being a good husband and father and taking the time off and therefore excusable and commendable? So Sarah coming to my defense.
Look at that.
After what it, I think it's Austin and
how
Langley.
How much did you pay Sarah for that comment?
Not a penny, I promise. Right. Okay. After Austin has sort of put me under the gun here for being the reason that the Canucks struggled in mid-February last year.
Dad of the year of your
games.
Brendan Batchelor.
Sure, I'll take it, whatever. Thanks, Sarah. I appreciate it very much. She then says, my question is about superstitions. My dad raised me to be very superstitious when it comes to hockey. My husband and kids just roll their eyes, but it doesn't stop me as it's real.
Sarah's LOL. A goalie, isn't she?
I don't know. We'll have to find out. Sarah, let us know. Are you a goalie? She says, have you or Randeep ever been superstitious about sports while playing or watching? And for me, the answer is yes. Like, I'm not completely out there in terms of superstition, but one thing I remember that stands out to me is when I started doing play-by-play for the Surrey Eagles and the BCHL, the team went on a really good playoff run that year. They won the Fred Page Cup. They won the Western Canada Cup as well. They went all the way to the semifinals of the national championship. And that year, I would wear the same suit consecutive games if we won, and I would change my suit if the group lost. And that carried us pretty deep in the playoffs. So there's part of me that says that I was a big factor, even though I wasn't on the ice at all. So I wouldn't say I'm superstitious, Sarah. I would say I'm a little stitious.
All right, so you were appealing to the hockey gods with your suit game. For me, more on the fan side. As a lot of the listeners know, and Batch, you know, I'm an Arsenal fan. So anytime I join Vancouver Arsenal, which is the supporting group here, I'll occasionally go watch a game. If they win, I'm going to go back. If they lose, I leave for X amount of games. I'm just like my viewing habits and where I watch the game, I'm superstitious on that front. Playing, no, I wouldn't say I am. I wouldn't say I'm superstitious on that front, but watching and like as a fan, you try to control whatever you can. You feel like you have a saying or an outcome on the game. We don't actually. But for me watching, if I've watched it at a bar with the Vancouver Arsenal and they won, I'll be back next time. If they lose, I'm not going back.
Yeah, playing, I would say I'm not superstitious, but I'm routine-based. So, like, when I play a beer league game, I do
the same things
in warm-up every time. The one sort of caveat to that is sometimes I'm late, I miss warm-up, I'm getting there right before the game. I don't go through that process, and I've still had good games when I don't. So okay. I'm not someone that's, like, tied to it that believes I have to do it to play well. But I like doing it. I like getting myself ready for the game that way.
I normally don't do that. Not for hockey, but for basketball. Anytime I take a free throw, I have the same process. And I feel like when I go through that process, it's because, you know, and I miss, it's because of that one moment. I was off my game. I didn't go through my process. So maybe I think a little superstitious on my free throw game in basketball.
Next question from Justin in East Van says, is Quinn Hughes one of the top three players in the NHL right now? And this is such a hard question because it's so subjective. You know, are we just saying, you know, straight up best players? Are we saying most valuable to their team? Because I think Quinn Hughes deserves heart votes this year for how valuable he is to the Canucks. But if we're just looking at straight skill and ability, I'm willing to say he's top five guaranteed. I'm not quite sure I'm ready to say he's top three.
Top three. Connor McDavid's obviously up there.
Nathan MacKinnon, probably.
Nathan MacKinnon, and honestly, I think Leon Draisaitl, the MVP aspect, I don't agree with him in being in that conversation, but when we're talking about most skilled players in the NHL, I think Leon is very much in that discussion. But Quinn Hughes at number four or five? Like, he's the best defenseman on the planet. I stand by that. It's something that I think his influence on the game is greater than Cale Makar's, and that's not a slight to Cale Makar. It's just the way that Quinn's playing right now, there's no better defenseman in the world than him. So give me number four on that list. I'm willing to put Quinn Hughes on number four or number five on that list.
Yeah, I think we can agree on that. Definitely top five. There's an argument there for top three. I'm just not sure I'm the one that's willing to make it at this point. But hey, he's been great this season, not trying to take anything away from him. He's been so crucial to the Canucks' success, and it's hard to think about where they would be without him. It's also hard to think where they would be without Kevin Lankinen as we switch to goaltending.
I just want to say, rounding up my top five, it'd probably be Nikita Kucherov.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Yeah, there you go. So we've got Randeep's top five locked in, set in stone. We're good to go. Princess Erica writes in, says, I'm genuinely curious. Do you think there is a way that the Canucks can keep Lankinen after this season, or has he priced himself out? And the way that the Canucks manage their goaltending going forward is fascinating, because Thatcher Demko has one more season left on a $5 million deal, and then he would become a free agent. Now, what the Canucks choose to do in the crease is going to be solely dependent on Demko's recovery, how he looks when he gets back into the lineup. Is he able to get back to his old self? Is he able to stay healthy? Then you have to have the conversation about how much is an extension worth and what makes sense there. So I will say I think there is a world where the Canucks bring back Kevin Lankinen, because even if he has to be paid a little bit more than the $875,000 he's making right now, which makes him one of the best bargains in the NHL with the way he's played early in the season, because of Demko's injury history, I think you probably want to have an insurance policy there, and a pretty good one, and Kevin Lankinen certainly represents that. And he would also allow you to limit Demko's games, limit his minutes, not have to run him too hard or play him too much, and risk another injury as a result.
So much of this is also on what the player wants. And I'm not talking solely about money. I'm talking about long-term fit. Remember, this is a guy that's bounced around a little bit. Chicago, Nashville, now Vancouver. You want some security. And if you have a season, a start to the season like this, and if he can carry it on to a certain degree, if he can be consistent and he's playing in a platoon with Thatcher Demko, it's a perfect world, but he's able to give this team quality starts and be a difference maker at certain points of the season. Batch, I don't want to speculate on the money, because we don't really know that. We'll have to wait and see what he thinks with his agent, Todd Diamond. But I look at it more as it's not only money, it's long-term security. If you're a goaltender at his age, you're saying, yeah, I've gone to a few teams. I want to lock in for a 3 or 4 year deal if I can get it. So I think there is a world that Vancouver can keep Lankinen, but a lot of it depends on what you see from Thatcher Demko and what you see from Kevin Lankinen the rest of the way when Demko gets back. If it's a platoon, that might cheapen the contract a little bit. However, if Lankinen is seeing more ice and he's required to play a little bit more and he plays really well, what's that number? Is it going to be double? Is it going to be triple what he's making right now?
And another factor here is what Thatcher Demko's number ends up being.
Sure.
On an extension too, because you know you only want to commit so many of your cap dollars to your goaltending. And if Demko comes back and is great and is healthy and shows that he can be that starting goaltender again, then there's no reason to believe that he wouldn't be one of the highest paid goaltenders in the NHL. And if that's the case, then can you afford what would essentially amount to an expensive backup or an expensive insurance policy? So I'm sure the Canucks probably internally have a number that they'd like to spend in total on goaltending. And what it will come down to is how big a piece of the pie Thatcher Demko's extension takes up, assuming that he is extended, assuming that he is able to get back to being healthy. And then how high does Kevin Lankinen's number go based on the way he's played this year? Can you make them both work? Is it something where they can share pieces of the pie, or does it not make sense to keep a guy that would be essentially an overpaid backup based on the way that he's played? It's a fascinating conversation. I guess ultimately, to answer the question from Princess Erica, I would say I don't think he's priced himself out yet, because we don't actually know what that price will be yet, and we don't know how much the Canucks might need him based on Thatcher Demko and his trajectory coming back into the lineup. Sticking with goaltending, we get a question from Woodrow the Eligible Bachelor, who says, what should the Canucks do with Artturs Shelovs? And it's obviously been a tough go here early in the year for Shelovs at the NHL level. He's coming off the game against the Penguins where he gave up 5 goals and made 18 saves. The lone loss of the road trip here for the Canucks thus far. And here's what I will say about Artturs Shelovs, and I think it's a perfect example of what sometimes happens in this market with this fan base. Shelovs had a great run in the playoffs last year, played very well. And people were talking about, oh, Demko's hurt. Should they trade Demko? Should they allow Shelovs to be the starter because of how well he played? That was an overreaction.
Yep.
Shelovs didn't have a big enough body of work to do that. And even though he had a great run in the playoffs, you needed to see more from him. Now he's had a tough start to this year. He's still a young goaltender, 23 years of age. He's only played 16 regular season NHL games in his career. And now people are saying, what do you do with him? Well, the answer is you're patient with him because he's a young goalie. Once Demko gets back healthy, you send him down to Abbotsford and you let him play. And you let him play and you let him play and you let him play. And you let him build his confidence back up. You let him work on some things. And you see where things go in terms of his development. Just like I wasn't ready to anoint Artur Shelov's the starter for this team after the way he played in the playoffs last year, I'm not ready to write him off yet either. And he is still an asset for your organization and a good young goaltender that has an opportunity to grow into an NHL goaltender. And just because it hasn't worked for him this season doesn't change that fact in my mind.
Well, let's go back to last year, right? In the AHL, before he got called up to the NHL to play third-string goaltender behind Thatcher Demko and Casey DeSmith, he was not having the greatest of seasons in the AHL, right? This is a guy that was trying to figure it out and working on his game, which is exactly what he's still trying to do. Expediting that process of throwing him in, you know, the playoff games, that was a credit to what he was able to do. In that moment, when he got thrown in the deep end, he was able to be calm, he was able to thrive, but what does the larger sample size show us? It's that he's still trying to figure out his goaltending at the pro level. So I think with Shelovs, he does need AHL time. And to your point, that's not out of the norm here. That's going to be something that's expected because that's what he was doing last year. You talk to Kevin Woodley, and I remember having conversations with him about Artur Shelovs and saying, hey, you know, he was actually being outplayed by Nikita Tolopilo at the AHL level that year. But at the NHL level, he's brought something. He's, you know, played really well. It's not what they saw in the AHL. But at the NHL level, he brought it. Okay, now you're having him kind of regress back to maybe where he was at before, which is natural. So I think 23 years of age, it's going to take time. There's going to be moments where he's going to have to play at the AHL. He's going to have to duke it out with those other goaltenders that are hungry down there as well, some veterans, some young goaltenders. That's natural, and let it play out. So I think the best thing that can happen for Artur Shelovs right now is Thatcher Demko comes back. You've got two goaltenders at the NHL level. He can go down to the AHL level and hopefully boss that crease, make it his, come into camp next year and next season, and then show what he's about because he hasn't really had that extended run as the guy in the AHL with success.
And to the question we were answering moments ago, if Lankinen has priced himself out, or if it doesn't make sense for them to bring him back, then Shelovs may get a legitimate crack to be the NHL backup again this time next year. So you want him to go down, you want him to build his confidence back up, you want him to grow his game, and you want him to be ready because you might need him again. So you can't write him off yet, I don't think. I know it's been a tough stretch for him, but he's still got lots of room to grow, and I think we'll see that from him once he gets back down to Abbotsford. We've got time for one more question, and this one is going to force us to put on our thinking caps here and try and project well into the future, Randy. This is from at Josh C. on Blue Sky, good friend of mine, Josh Custodio, hosts a local wrestling show called Wrestling Brain that you can watch on Twitch. And Josh writes in and says, what do you think the Canucks look like 20 years in the future? Have the logo and colors changed? Have they won the Stanley Cup? What is perceived as their golden era?
So you're asking two guys in their 30s to figure out what they will perceive as the cool brand when they're in their 50s. All right.
Will they have changed their colors? I'm going to say their primary colors will not change.
I'm going to go the opposite and say yes, they will. I feel like in the last 5 years, when it comes to the jersey game, what is old is new again. And there's always this recycling of ideas, and I feel like, hey, listen, the 94 jersey is now the hot thing, right? The black skate jersey, maybe in the future, I don't know, I'm just guessing, but let's just say maybe the white jersey makes a comeback too. Some people would like that. 20 years from now, I feel like it's going to be constant change. Maybe the orca comes back. Like, think about it.
Like you mean the blue and red?
The blue and red, yeah, blue and red. Like, imagine, remember the Grizzlies jersey. I'll use an example. I'm wearing Vancouver Grizzlies socks right now. I remember talking to Mike Bibby about that jersey, and he said, we thought that jersey was hideous. What is one of the highest-selling basketball jerseys out there? It's a Vancouver Grizzlies jersey. So 20 years from now, maybe we're going to be – I think we're going to be looking at a different color scheme altogether.
Okay, I don't disagree with the sentiment behind what you're talking about, and that's why I think they're going to have a variety of cool and different-looking third jerseys. But – this is an organization that has changed its primary colors multiple
20 years,
times.
Though, man. 20 years, man.
I think you want to build a tradition of keeping the same colors. Right now, you're back to the colors that you broke into the NHL with, and I think their primary jerseys will continue to be some combination of blue, green, and white. Like, maybe they switch to a fully green jersey at some point. I'm sure they redesign the way the jerseys look. Maybe they switch the logo, but they're going to stay blue and green as their primary jerseys, and then, yeah, you can have all sorts of different third jerseys in different
ways. So what you're asking us is to predict what our Gen Z overlords at that time will be deciding. I have no idea. My thought is it'll be variety of colors, but we'll see.
Yeah,
we'll see.
You know, Gen Z overlords, maybe it'll be a different jersey every game and you'll never have the same color.
Yeah, maybe games will be broadcast on TikTok at that point, or if that's still a thing,
yeah,
or the next iteration.
Or whatever the next social media is, like VR, virtual reality, yeah. TikTok.
How dated am I saying TikTok's going to be a thing in 20 years? Okay, while we have a couple of seconds here, quick thing. How was Survivor Series? Like your 10-second review. Batch, hit me up with your review. I wasn't there. I was working.
Yeah. Quickly, before we do that, I will give it to you. I just want to finish. Josh also asked, have the Canucks won the Stanley Cup in 20 years? I'm going to say yes. I believe they've got 20 more years. They can get the job done. What will be perceived as the golden era, whatever era the Canucks win the Stanley Cup in, because we know how much the 2011 team and the 94 team are glorified in the present day. If a team wins the Stanley Cup for the Vancouver Canucks, those guys will essentially walk on water and be able to do no wrong in this city.
I hope I'm around for that, and I'm with you. I think it'll be in the 20 years. I would even go lower than that because I'm a little bit more optimistic in that regard, but that team, whoever it is, whether it's 5, 10, 15, 20, 100 years from now, they're never paying for a meal in this city ever again. Like, that's how popular those group of players will be, because your point about 82, 94, and 2011, those guys are still some of the most loved people in this city. Now, if you win that game, yeah, we're talking about them like their mythology.
Yeah, absolutely. Statues and lots of retired numbers and all sorts of things. So thanks for the question, Josh, and making us think and speculate. That's great.
Love that. Love both of those questions.
As for Survivor Series, yeah, I thought it was a pretty good show. A lot of fun. The main event was definitely star-studded, although I think a lot of people were expecting a surprise appearance from someone like The Rock or John Cena, and it didn't deliver.
Including you.
In that regard, yeah, I was very convinced. I went as far as to predict it on Canucks Talk this past week when I was on with Jamie Dodd, and he asked me about it. I said, yeah, I think we're getting The Rock. Well, we didn't get The Rock, but we got a pretty entertaining couple of War Games matches, and it was a fun night at the rink at Rogers Arena, certainly, and a lot of people enjoyed themselves.
I'm going to take credit for the OG Bloodline winning because I clearly gave Sami Zayn the Hockey Night in Canada up and Punjabi bump since he jumped on our show a couple of weeks ago. But no, that was awesome. I wasn't able to go, but my dad went and he loved it. So wrestling fan since 1971, and glad you had a good time too.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun for sure. And on that note, we will finish the show because we're just out of time. Again, if you missed any part of the show, it lives as a podcast on the Canucks Central podcast feed. We'll be back on the air on Tuesday when the Canucks wrap up the road trip against the Minnesota Wild. That'll be a 5 o'clock puck drop, the pregame show at 4, and you'll hear it live right here on your official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.